Well, you're at the game and it's Friday night, and you want to make sure that the calls are right. This is high school football rules. There's a hold and a fumble and an illegal pass. Now, what do you do? Because you're the ref. Well, this is high school football rules. Well, sit on down and kick right back. You're going to listen to Luke and Matt. They're talking high school.
Welcome back to High School Football Rules, the podcast where we talk about nothing, and I mean nothing, but high school football rules. We will not talk about college. We will not talk about professional. We will not talk about third grade games. As always, I'm Matt, and I've got my brother Luke. Luke, hey, say hi to everybody.
It's nice to be back from sabbatical.
Sabbatical, yeah. No, this is good. This is good. Brought a little energy from the other times. You should just say, hey. So that's good. So tonight we are going to talk about, this is, if you're listening to this podcast in the future, we are talking about the 2023 NFHS football rule changes. It is currently, well, we're into August, Luke. I think I've got my first game in less than 3 weeks. Wow. Game zero over in Wisconsin. So less than 3 weeks. So it's about time to get into the season here. We're going to talk about the new rule changes. We're going to fly through about four or five of them, but the big one will be the change to the basic spot penalty enforcement. And I'll have to admit that I am super glad that somebody came to their senses and just said, let's make this a little simpler and make it a little more fair, right? I mean, we'll get into it, but, you know, they used to have a holding that was 10 yards back, and all of a sudden the team, instead of being first and 20, they were like first and 38, right? Like, it just... It ended up making it so ridiculous for anybody to try to even get a first down. They might as well just punt it right there. So
yeah, and we also got rid of the intentional foul that we have had in high school sports this year. So a couple things.
I got to talk to you about that one too, so I'm not so sure. But should we get into the rule changes? I'm just going to follow along the script here. Luke, jump in whenever you want, and we'll kind of take it from there. So according to the NFHS, the National Federation of High School Sports? What is NFHS?
National Federation of High School? I don't know.
Yeah.
High school sports?
No, that's good.
It's high school, all one right. Word? We both graduated. We should probably know the answer to that.
Right. I know. All right. First change. They have clarified that the towel or towels do not have to be the same color for each player. Player towels may contain one manufacturer's logo and or. So you can have a logo and a school logo, and or one school logo, neither exceeding 2 1/4 inches. Hope you don't bring your tape measure out to the field, Luke, but can't be more than 2 1/4 inches. Towels must be solid color, but now do not have to be the same color, a solid color for each player. Towels may not be ball or penalty flag colored, so it can't be brown, can't be gold, if you will.
Yeah, and it's just now if people have, one player has a white one, one player has a black one, there's no penalty that they all have to be exactly the same. Whatever that solid color is for that player, the team doesn't have to like choose one specific color that everyone matches with.
Yeah, I think the big thing was like in October, I don't know if it's the cancer days or whatever, where they have like pink ones, right? So you can have a pink one, you can have a white one, you can have a black one, whatever, just don't make it ball or flag color. All right, do we need to discuss that one anymore?
I think that's enough of that.
We should move on, yeah. The next rule change was clarified when a player is in bounds after being out of bounds. And this is specifically the definition 229.1.
Yeah.
So, in the definitions, rule 2, we go to number 29. Article 1 says, a player or other person is out of bounds when any part of that person is touching anything other than another player or game official that is on or outside the sideline or end line. You used to end right there, but they've added this next part. And that player remains out of bounds until returning to the field with any body part touching the field and no body part touching out of bounds. So they come back in, essentially be a ballerina on a tiptoe, so long as nothing else is out of bounds. Does that make sense?
That's correct. And the big thing here is that there was a little ambiguity between if you're touching out of bounds, you're out of bounds. If you're touching inbounds, you're inbounds. But what if you're airborne coming from one or the other. So this helps like define the status of where that player is. The example that was given with the rules update was a player who steps out of the back of the end zone, they leap into the air. If they are the first one to touch the pass and they're still airborne, their status, because they came from out of bounds, remains out of bounds. And when they first touch that ball, the ball is now touching a player out of bounds, so it's incomplete. The converse side of that is if they did get back in bounds, we'd have a touching foul or violation. So this is just saying you keep the status from where you were. And the real big thing is wide receivers and touching passes if they're kind of going airborne.
Okay, so to get deep into the weeds here, because I'm thinking about this as a back judge, if a guy runs out of the back of the end zone, he's running, he gets bumped, whatever, he's out of bounds, he jumps up, catches the ball, so his status is out of bounds, he has not touched inbounds yet, he's not defined by the new rule as being back inbounds, jumps, catches the ball, lands down in the end zone as if he's good, it's just simply a no catch because he's out of bounds.
Correct, yeah. So you as the back judge would have the mechanic of giving the incomplete pass.
Pass.
There's no flag or anything that way. You have to explain yourself to the coach, but yeah.
Yeah. Usually I would say out of bounds, you know, do the two hands waving to the right or waving to the left just as a clarifier. I don't know if that's not an official signal or anything, but it certainly helps out.
That's one where it's good to help sell it. Like you're telling everyone in the crowd what happens there, but the coach is going to have a question for you. So knowing that his status was still out of bounds is the explanation you want your wings to be able to give back to that coach.
Now, this guy goes out of bounds, gets back in legally, jumps and touches the ball, is the first player to touch the ball after being out of bounds. Is he league? I mean, is this an NFL rule? Am I thinking of this correctly? Or because he's the first person to touch it after he came back in, is that illegal touching?
It is, yeah. So he's lost his eligibility to touch it until it touches another player or a referee, or there's a couple different situations, but he can't be the first one. So even though he might come in bounce and then the pass comes, it's still considered an illegal touching violation according to the rule.
So you'd throw a flag there.
That one's a flag.
So if you wanted to do a little preventative officiating, you would just say incomplete pass, he was out of bounds.
Correct.
If you wanted to.
Depends on how many cameras you got watching you.
Yeah, but, you know, game and situation, right? If it's 58-0, I mean, you're not going to throw. I wouldn't personally throw. I would just quietly explain that to the coach. That's a 58-0 call that we're just going to call him out of bounds. We're not going to penalize him any further.
Yeah, and we were focusing on the back of the end zone, but what happens a lot is if we have some kind of fly pattern or go pattern towards the sideline, the line of scrimmage guys might have a player step out of bounds. Again, if his last step was out of bounds and he jumps to get the ball, they also have this same situation where they're judging, is it an incomplete pass or is it illegal touching? Now the rules just helping clarify his status is now that he is out of bounds when he jumps.
Okay. The next rule change for 2023, according to the NFHS Rules Committee. They added a list of criteria to help identify players who should be defined as defenseless receivers. So this in the definition section is 232.16d. They've added a new section, the 16d. Now we're nine or four. We're some time in here. I think we should just go through the entire list of defenseless players. It's so important. It's just a good reminder at the beginning of the season here. So I'm going to read 232.16 in its entirety, and I'll let you know when D is the one where they've clarified what it is, and then we'll go to 943G where they just talk about it just briefly, but we'll go to that. So this whole intent is to, this clarification should help game officials and coaches be by defining allowable contact against defenseless receivers. So there is allowable contact. I think that's the key here, and we'll get into that when we talk to D. So, Article 16, 332.16, a defenseless player is a player who, because of his physical position and focus of concentration, is especially vulnerable to injury. A player who initiates contact against a defenseless player is responsible for making legal contact. When in question, a player is defenseless. That's key. That's pretty darn easy to say. You know what, coach? When in doubt, that guy's defenseless. And that's what they should be teaching as well, teaching coaching. Examples of a defenseless player include, but are not limited to, A, a passer. And a passer is a passer is a passer until he's not, correct?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the same thing when he, you know, if he does a few pump fakes and then tucks the ball, well, then he's a runner.
Well, and again, the reason we're defining him there is that his concentration is elsewhere. If he is a passer who has decided I'm not going to throw and is running, he's at that point transitioned to a runner. But anytime he is scanning downfield, looking elsewhere, and they just doesn't potentially see a hit coming, they want to protect him in an extra fashion from contact.
Gotcha. B, a receiver attempting to catch a pass who has not had time to clearly become a runner. Fairly simple there, I think. C, the intended receiver of a pass in the action during and immediately following an interception or potential interception. So we're talking about a defensive player here. They can be a defenseless player.
Mm-hmm.
D, the new one here, a receiver in B and C above, including the person intercepting the pass who is forcefully contacted by an opponent, and that contact is not, one, incidental contact as a result of making a play on the ball, two, initiated with open hands, or three, an attempt to tackle by wrapping arms around the receiver. It's not defenseless player if the contact is one, incidental contact as a result of making a play on the ball, two, initiated with open hands. So you got open hands. I mean, as hard as you can bench press that guy or push him away, that is not considered
Correct. This it parallels the way we think about blindside blocks, right? We talk to players and coaches about, are the arms extended? Do we have open hands? They're putting that in the same context of what things you can do to a defenseless player. So if you hit a wide receiver who's trying to catch a pass and is defenseless because of that, if you hit him with open hands and extended hands, that's okay.
And then the third one, an attempt to tackle by wrapping arms around the receiver. So basically, you're just not launching your shoulder, neck, head, body, you know, like a body block. You're using your arms, your hands.
Yep, and the guidance that they've given is that, you're saying it correctly, the guidance that they've given us too is that there's those situations where someone may hit hard and then wrap up his arms afterward. That is still excessive contact to a defenseless player. If the whole action involves the wrap of the arms, that's the one that we want to say was done correctly and is not endangering the player. So D is giving players and coaches guidance about how you can legally hit someone that's in a defenseless position.
Gotcha. I'm going to go through, there's E, F, G, H, and I. I'm just going to go through them as a reminder to everybody. Defenseless player is a runner already in the grasp of a tackler whose forward progress has been stopped. Forward progress has been stopped. That does not give another defensive player the right to just come up and tee off on that guy. F, a kickoff or punt returner attempting to catch or recover a kick, or one who has completed a catch or recovery and has not had time to protect himself or herself. I don't know why they don't. Could be a herself. Or has not clearly become a runner. G, a player on the ground, including a runner who has obviously given himself up and is sliding feet first. So this comes in a lot. I mean, from like defensive linemen who are just so hungry to get to the ball, right? A guy's tackle, he's on the ground, and this guy comes in late. You know, just smokes him, defenseless player. Usually, if no harm, no foul, give him a warning and say that. Could have been a foul, young man. Watch, you know, watch. You're in charge of...
Well, and we've talked about it previously with the late hit stuff. The play to the whistle mantra is gone from our game today.
We should have brought that up right away.
Yeah, so that this is what that's covering, right? That is an old way of thinking about the way this plays. The play ends itself. The guy's on the ground. It's your responsibility not to hit a grounded player. So, yeah, this is just back to something we hit really hard in Rule 9 earlier, just reinforcing the fact that the whistle thing, the play to the whistle is not something we want to hear. It's not the philosophy that anyone's following anymore.
H, a player obviously out of the play or not in the immediate vicinity of the runner. Again, this happens on kickoffs more than anything, right? Where you got some lineman going right at the kicker just to knock him over. You know, defenseless player. And then I, a player who receives a blindside block with forceful contact, not initiated with open hands. This does, so that's the end of that definition. This does go into 943G.
That's just the actual foul for the illegal contact. So it's a 15-yard.
Yeah, and I mean, and so this, you know, this is conduct of players and others, section 4, illegal personal contact. You know, it's basically just making any other contact with an opponent, including a defenseless player. So, I mean, you fall back on 9-4 often. It's illegal personal contact. You know, like you can fall back on that pretty darn easy. That is a 15-yard penalty. If there's fighting, it's a disqualification. But, you know, for the most part, it's just a 15-yard penalty. You know, the one thing that I was reading here, and I have to remind myself this all the time, in high school, you know, this illegal personal contact, and I'm getting off topic, but I don't care. This is a rules podcast. This is how the rules go. You know, we do have a 5-yard face mask and a 15-yard face mask. When I was looking through these penalties in 943, and so I have to remember that. And I often pass on 5-yard face mask, particularly if it's guy's hands just sliding off, or like if my grandma, you know, in the third row can't see that it's a face mask, I will just. And also game and time situation, blah, blah, blah. You know, I usually only call a face mask if it's a 15. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that as the white hat, Luke?
It's in our code, so there's reasons that you would maybe call it. Obviously, the difference between a 5 and a 15 are tied to, is it a big twist and turn? Is it the exorcist? That's a 15-yarder. If it's maybe just a tug down or something, that could be the potential for a 5. I would hope it's big enough to be a 15 if we do call a flag, but I can't forget the fact that it's in the rule book. Coaches are listening to the same podcast, and they'll yell at us if we don't call it. So,
yeah, I have started to remind people that we are officials. We are not rules judges or rules enforcers, right? We officiate the game, and that every game has its different times and places and reasons for doing things. And just because it's in the rule book doesn't mean that that time and place for that game in particular means that we should or need to call that foul. You know, we are officials. We are not the letter of the law rules judges or rules interpreters, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the parallel would be if you were driving in a 35 and you drive 37, do you want to get pulled over and get a ticket? Sometimes calls that we could make would be like that in a football game. We obviously, our goal is to get the guy who's going 75 in the 35. That's the kind of stuff that we want to really, we have to get every time. But know that there is some things in our code that is nitpicky, like a 37 and a 35.
The next change, the football rule changes, 2023 by the NFHS states, intentional grounding exception changed. So 752, there's an exception in 2A and C. This change permits the exception for intentional grounding to the first and only player to possess the ball after the snap ends. You know, I always wondered that. So it wasn't in the rules before. So if you had a sweep to the left where you pitched it to the running back, he was running out, and all of a sudden he was going to do a pass to the receiver downfield, but he couldn't find anybody. He just threw it out of bounds. He is not eligible for the intentional grounding exception. Is that true?
Yeah, so last year, any passer could legally ground the ball if they were outside of the free blocking zone, and this cleans that up. So if I was on a sweep play and I'm going to get a 7-yard loss, officially, if I threw it beyond the line of scrimmage, it's still the only pass we've had on the play, but you could get an advantage and gain some yardage from that. So this addition to this says that only the person who receives a snap can legally ground it. You can still have people pitch and pass and do all kinds of goofy plays, but the ability to legally ground it and not have a loss of yardage is restricted to the person who receives the snap. So most of the time, that's going to be the quarterback.
Yep. Wow, I like that one. The next rule change, football rules changes, 2023 by the NFHS states that they removed intentional from pass interference, specifically table 752C. There was a deletion. By removing intentional from pass interference, this change puts the rule in line with how it is already enforced, which is a 15-yard penalty. I would have never known that there was intentional in the pass interference. I mean, what's the point of removing this? Why are they cleaning this up?
Well, it's a good point. You've been doing it for what now, 10, 15 years? Have you ever called a 30-yard penalty?
Let's see. No, I think I'm going on 18 now.
Okay, so 18 years. Have you ever called a 30-yard penalty? That's what was actually in the book this whole time. So there was.
You know what? I did know that. Okay.
Yeah. Good. Well, again, it's.
I knew it was in there. I would never call it ever. So yeah. Okay. I did know that. So they used to have it. So pass interference was a call. But if it was deemed intentional, that was another foul on top of it. So you essentially had a double foul for a 30-yard penalty. Is that?
Yeah, and you would enforce them both. So it was one of the goofy rules that had been around for a long time. And again, it's a unicorn as far as I've never even heard of someone calling it. I'm sure we can go to YouTube and probably find an example. But it just wasn't in line. The penalty didn't fit the crime, right? The 15-yard penalty. Usually is enough for the receiving team to get a first down, and it just didn't fit with the way that we call other things. So this is a good cleanup because, again, it was not being enforced this way.
Final rule. Well, not the final rule, but the big rule that we're going to discuss on this podcast. We're not going to talk about six-man rules. We're in Minnesota, do a little bit in Wisconsin. I don't know where any six-man game is played, so we're not going to do the six-man rule changes. But the big one to discuss in the 2023 NFHS football rule changes is resulting around the change in basic spot penalty enforcement. This change restructures and clarifies the amendments to Rule 10 to eliminate the excessive penalty enforcement for offensive fouls that occur behind the line of scrimmage. This revision stipulates the basic spot for enforcement of fouls behind the line of scrimmage is the previous spot rather than the spot of the foul unless otherwise specified by rule. Current penalties for illegal kicking, batting, and participation fouls, and provisions for offensive fouls occurring in the end zone that may result in a safety remain intact. All right. I think the best thing, if you have a rule book, is to go straight to 10-4 to talk about the basic spot. The easiest thing for us is to just go through. There's a great table on page 83 of the new rule book. Table 10-4 is the summary of many fouls that can occur during running plays and their penalties and basic spots unless otherwise specified by rule. I'm going to read just what they have here from a narrative standpoint, and then we'll go. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 and a half, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 different boxes, and we'll just kind of walk through those, and I'll let you explain maybe the rules or, you know, a play that this applies to, and we'll kind of just go from there.
Sure.
Does that sound good, Luke?
Yep.
All right. Enforcement provisions apply to all player fouls, and the committee philosophy is based on the fact that a team is given the advantage of the distance which is gained without the assistance of a foul. All fouls are penalized from the basic spot unless the spot is otherwise specified by rule. The type of play has significance if a foul occurs. If a foul does occur, the game official must know the type of play as defined in 233, as this will aid in determining the basic spot of enforcement when the spot is otherwise specified by rule. Recent changes to 10-4 specify the data needed by the game officials regarding the spot of the foul and the results of the play to help guide penalty enforcement. All right, the first situation they go in. So we got this table defines fouls by A, which is the offense, and fouls by B, which is the defense. The first scenario is a foul by A. The spot of the foul is behind the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is behind the line of scrimmage. The basic spot is going to be the previous spot, which is the original line of scrimmage for that play.
Yep. So this is, again, probably the biggest change is that we used to enforce from the spot of the foul. Now when we have fouls by the offense in the backfield, essentially, we're going to be going to the previous spot to enforce them. So we won't get into the situation where a holding penalty 5 yards into the backfield creates a first and 25. The hold will be enforced 10 yards from the previous spot, and we'd be at first and 20. So still punitive, obviously, but you don't end up with a first and 37 or something goofy like that anymore.
Okay, let me bring up. We talked pregame this one. Pregame, so very important. Got to pregame this stuff. A foul by A, so the offense, behind the line of scrimmage. If they're on the 20-yard line, the foul occurs at the 18 going back in, if I'm explaining myself correctly. But the end of the play is behind the line of scrimmage, but that end of the play ended up in a 10-yard loss. I mean, you as the defensive coach, you would just decline the penalty. You would decline the holding penalty and take the result of the play.
Correct. I mean, especially with the change that we've done this year, the old options would have been going from where it ended, and you could still take yardage away. This year, since the foul is going to be enforced from the previous line of scrimmage, it might make a ton more sense to decline and take the result of the play. It could make the difference of 2 yards, but the fact that you get a down out of there, that's the biggest change.
So instead of being first and 20, you might be second and 15, but you might say, hey, I'd rather be at second and 15 than first and 20 and see what happens there. Okay. The second scenario in this new table, it's a foul by A, the offense. The spot of the foul is behind the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. So the runner, let's just assume it's a running play, the runner ended up positive yards for the play. The penalty happened behind the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. Yeah. The basic spot is the previous spot. So we will go from the original line of scrimmage for that play.
Correct. And again, the notion that they kind of put in that description earlier is that it's assumed you wouldn't have gotten that yardage had you not fouled. So the thing that's changed is now we're going to the previous spot as opposed to where the foul occurred, but we're still not giving you any added yardage that you gained after or beyond where the previous spot was in this case.
All right. Scenario 3 in the table, table 10-4, page 83 on the 2023 NFHS football rules book. Foul by A, foul by the offense. The spot of the foul is beyond the line of scrimmage. End of the play is behind the line of scrimmage. The basic spot of penalty enforcement is the previous spot, which is the original line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And we talked about the types of fouls that are called here are most likely going to be safety fouls. So I have something like a wide receiver that's going out and trying to pick up a linebacker or a safety. So he is now in the defensive backfield, if you will, but 10 yards from where the previous spot was, he commits a safety foul. The actual play ends behind the line of scrimmage. So the foul is way away from where we're enforcing this. When we have a foul by A beyond and the run ends behind, we're just going back to the previous spot now instead of going to the end of the run.
Okay. So again, you're probably going to explain to the coach or the captain, whoever you're talking to, that you can either have a second and 12 or first and 20 or second and 18 or first and 20. You know, so you have to clearly explain to the coach and or to the captain the two scenarios, and then they will most likely have to make the decision there. Do they want the second down and loss of yards, or do they want to start over the first down with, you know, so again, it's the same scenario as in the first. All right, the next scenario, box 4, it's got two scenarios in this box here. So I'm going to read through the first one, okay? Again, it's a foul by A, the offense. The spot of the foul is beyond the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. The basic spot, a foul behind the end of the run or related run, a spot foul.
Yeah, so the foul has occurred behind the end of the run. So let's just say we ran, we gained 10 yards. The foul occurred 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. We are going from the spot of the foul in that case. Again, they've written the rule to say you got 5 yards and no matter what, but since you fouled 5 yards down the field, we're not giving you any additional yardage you got after that. So we're enforcing from where the foul occurred. This is where the location of the flag is very important.
Yeah, so we've got, let's just say it's 2nd and 5, right? 2nd and 5 yards to go to get to a first down. The foul happens 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, so right at the first down mark, but the runner got beyond that, right? So they gained 10 yards. So the penalty will be from the spot of the foul. So you'll go 10 yards back from that. So now they're going to be at 2nd and 10.
Correct. Yep.
Am I saying that correctly?
Yep. Everything you said was correct there. Yep.
So you do have to know where that foul occurred, because they might be in some situation where, oof, you know, it might be 20 yards down the field and they only needed 2 yards to gain, but they gained 18, but that's going to bring it back to only gaining 8, but they still get a first down on that run, but they just don't get as far down the field as they would have.
Correct. Yeah, again, you've gotten the yardage you would have gotten. The foul is what we're penalizing. So, yeah, you got it right.
So you still can get a first down, but it all depends on where the foul occurred and what the down and distance
was. Correct.
Okay. The next little subsection of that. Scenario 4, a foul by A, so again by the offense. The spot of the foul is beyond the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. Basic spot. Foul, advance of end of run or related run. Succeeding spot.
Yep. So this is now, we're out beyond the line of scrimmage, so I've gained my 5 yards. The penalty occurs beyond that, is what this is saying. So the foul is advanced at the end of the run. Now, this is the one spot where the actual rule book language would be considered confusing. So I want to spend a little time talking about succeeding spot. The types of plays that cause this language to be a little goofy are tied to if there's a fumble. If, like, it's not just a run that ends there. If we have a fumble, you know, in high school, if we fumble the ball forward out of bounds, the actual spot that you would enforce this from is where the fumble occurred. So, again, it could be more advantageous for the team that got, in this case, it's the foul by A, so it's probably not going to be more advantageous for where the foul occurred. But the enforcement spot and the end of the play are two different things. And in this case, succeeding spot would be incorrect, right? If I fumble four out of bounds, the succeeding spot is where the ball went out of bounds. We still,
but the end of the run was where he fumbled. Correct. Because then it's a loose ball. Yep.
Correct. So we are enforcing it from the end of the run. That's where succeeding spot doesn't work here. The one additional one we'll talk about is if I fumble and team B gets the ball and then they, wherever the ball ends up, you can't enforce team A's foul and like team B keep the ball and move it 10 more yards after they get that. So succeeding spot is where team B ends up with the ball. We would never enforce a penalty in addition to the turnover there. Because obviously the fumble occurred, the foul happened before team B got possession. So we wouldn't then tack it on, I guess is the way that this is saying succeeding spot right now. We still would either, they would decline the penalty and team B would keep the ball, or we would enforce from where team A fumbled again. So succeeding spot's goofy in a couple situations. Most of the time the play ends right there. That's what they were trying to put in here. But just know those situations with either fumbles or turnovers, this actually is incorrect the way it's stated right now.
Do they have to? Let's just dive deep, deep into the weeds here. You have a holding by an offensive lineman. The succeeding spot, you know, on the 50-yard line, let's just say.
And the scenario we're talking about, that's beyond the line of scrimmage. So they started at the 40. Yep. He holds downfield at the 50.
And the runner ended at the minus 45, so he's not quite to the 50
correct.
Yet. But he fumbles there, and Team B takes over. If Team B accepts that penalty, isn't it giving the ball back to Team A anyways?
Correct, and that's why, and that's just, why this language is...
That's incorrect. Why you would never do it, yeah. You would just never allow them. You can't allow them to enforce that
correct.
Penalty. Gotcha. Okay. So that is all of, you know, that's the first four that have gotten this chart, and those are all fouls by A. We're now going to fouls by B, which is the defense. All right. A foul by B. Spot of the foul is behind the line of scrimmage. The end of the play, behind the line of scrimmage. The basic spot is the previous spot, which is the original line of scrimmage for that play.
Yep. So we don't have to keep track of where it happened anymore. We just go to the previous spot when both the run and the foul occur behind.
All right. Foul by B. This is the next scenario. Foul by B. It's a spot foul. The spot of the foul is behind the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. The basic spot is the succeeding spot.
Yep. So the spot where, again, succeeding spot here means the spot where Team A ends up with the ball. So, again, if we have fumbles.
The run ended.
Yeah.
Or the run ended,
correct.
Right?
So, again, we're not talking about where the next play happens, which is what succeeding spot means. So, in this case, it'd be from where Team A ends their run.
What if we had a fumble in that scenario?
Again, team. This happens a lot. Team B face masks a lineman. Team A runs 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. He fumbles. The related run to that is the run play that Team A had. So we enforce the 15 yards from the end of the Team A run, the fumble spot.
So, but what if B recovered?
Yeah, go. You still
A gets it back.
A accepts the penalty, and the enforcement spot is from the end of the. They say succeeding spot. It's the end of the related run, is what they mean.
Gotcha. Okay. Scenario three for the defense, Team B, foul by B. The spot of the foul is beyond the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is behind the line of scrimmage. The basic spot is the previous spot.
Yep. So again, we didn't gain any yards, and there was a foul somehow to players that were blocking or something. We go to the previous spot for enforcement now.
Okay. And the last one in the chart is a foul by B. The spot of the foul is beyond the line of scrimmage. The end of the play is beyond the line of scrimmage. The basic spot is the succeeding spot. Yep.
Again, this is we don't care where Team B fouled. We're tacking it on to the end of the run.
Okay. Yeah, I think you just have to. I mean, that's the end of the chart there. It's actually the very last rule.
And the only thing to there was some exceptions they talked about up front. If we have a, let's just say we're at the negative five, so we're at the 5 yard line going out. A hold at the 2 would get enforced from the previous spot. Now, a hold in the end zone is still a safety. So that's what they're saying. It's not automatically going back to the previous spot. Yeah. You still have things like safeties and stuff where a foul occurring in the end zone leaves the ball. Yeah.
Yep.
So those things still override this philosophy. But it's a big deal when you get close to the goal line to really say, was it out? Because it can make a big difference in yardage. And again, the concept of automatic first downs aren't changing here. We still only have the 3, which some people call 4. The roughing.
There's four, Luke. Definitely four. As a person who long snapped once, there's definitely four. And was a holder, there's definitely four.
Well, it's two people in one rule is why it screws me up. It's 3 roughings, but yeah. 2 are covered in the one rule.
All right. Well, that is the end of the football rule changes 2023, as defined by the NFHS Rules Committee for Football. Came out on May 24th, 2023. So... I think we successfully got through our first episode of the season here.
It's good,
Luke,
to be back.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll catch up next time. We'll go through a couple of scenarios we got from some local coaches. Good coaches. Appreciate sending stuff in. Luke, do we still have an email address? Do we have a Twitter account? Is Twitter still a thing? Do we have a Twitter account that anybody can reach out with us, either to tell us that we're wrong or tell us that we're right, or suggest any sort of plays that we might discuss that they came across in one of their games?
You're right. If Twitter is gone, we're into the X world now. So we have posts instead of tweets. We have high school football rules, so HSFR podcast. So if you at that, our initials and podcast, that is our Twitter handle. I'll attach the email address thing to our podcast here too. It's high school football rules podcast at Gmail, I think, or something like that. So
yeah, we would love to get as many submissions as we can to bring up a few coaches from going to college and stuff. We often just ask for, hey, what happened weird? Ask some other officials what happened weird in your game. We're going to hopefully start getting into a bunch more of those now that we've gotten through most of these rules, and hopefully we have a little fun with some weird scenarios. So that's it for this week. Luke, thanks for joining me, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Well, you're at the game and it's Friday night, and you want to make sure that the calls are right. This is high school football rules. There's a hole and a fumble and an illegal pass. Now what do you do, cause you're the ref? Well, this is high school football rules. Well, sit on down and kick right back. You're gonna listen to Luke and Matt. They're talking high school football. Talking high school.